from cotton gins and grain elevators to factories and skyscrapers and grasslands to forests. There's only one host and one show covering it all. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
From the True Texan Studio, I'm Robert Pratt, and this is the Texas Hour from Pratt on Texas, your home for Texas political and news analysis without a donor or management-controlled muzzle or leash. Our Lone Star story of the day today, the U.S. Supreme Court is now in its fall term hearing cases, several such as Moore versus Harper and Sackett versus EPA, will have big effects on Texas and Texans. I want to go over those with you today, particularly this issue dealt with in Moore v. Harper and another related case. Our Lone Star story of the day, sponsored by Allied Compliance Services, providing affordable turnkey drug and alcohol testing programs for business and institutions, truckers and fleet owners. Allied Compliance Services is your best friend in compliance with DOT testing regulations. Reach the best in compliance at AlliedCompliance.com. Texas sales tax revenue for September was up 17.2% over September of the previous year. Remember, you gotta knock that number down somewhat due to inflation because the dollar is worth less. That's what inflation is. It's not prices going up. It's that the currency is worth less. And it's still, though, a gain. It's still a big gain over the previous year. And my friends, we've got other news, a little Alamo-related news and more in the stack today. Listen anywhere, anytime, whenever it fits your schedule. Get the podcast of Pratt on Texas, this show, and other long-form interviews at prattontexas.com. As always, my friends, it's a great day to be a Texan. The comptroller's got the numbers out saying the sales tax revenue totaled $3.69 billion in September, which, as I said, is 17.2% more than in September of 2021. Most of this revenue sales made in August. And he said surging receipts from non-retail sectors indicate the exceptionally strong spending by businesses in recent months and that continued unabated. But retail trade's not in very good shape, restaurants either, and that's a big part of our economy. We've shared that data with you, I think it was last week, from the Dallas Fed reports. The quote from the comptroller's office today says, Comptroller Hager, receipts from retail trade and restaurants grew moderately and at less than the rate of consumer price inflation. So that means people are actually spending less there. Motor vehicle sales and rental taxes were up 13% over the same period a year ago. Motor fuel taxes up only 2% from a year ago. Oil production tax was up 41%, and that's why we're rolling in it right now. Natural gas production tax up 91%. So 41% on oil production tax up over a year ago, 91% in natural gas. Hotel occupancy tax up 11% over a year ago, and alcoholic beverage tax up 13%. They're not eating out in restaurants as much, but they are drinking a lot, which you kind of see. You look around, you can see that sometimes. There was a piece out at the Center Square looking at National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. It's one of these scare pieces that, you know, Texas roads are among the most dangerous in the country. And yeah, Texas had the most, but then we have the most roads by far. But when you go and they actually rank it by vehicle miles traveled, Texas is the ninth highest traffic fatality state in the country. And you know who's number one when you norm it properly? South Carolina, followed by Mississippi and Arkansas, then Louisiana, then Florida, then New Mexico, then Delaware, then Tennessee, then Texas, and that just comes out to 1.5 roadway deaths for every 100 million miles traveled. We don't like to see people killed, but the fact is you look at these reports, and even when you get way down the list, you're not talking about that big of a difference in a fatality rate. I mean, let's go down to California at 19. Well, it's 1.29 deaths. I just found that interesting because people look at that and say, well, look out New York, they're 41. Yeah, but most of New York's population, it's a big state with lots of roads and highways, really good highways like Texas builds. But most of the population lives in a city where they don't drive. I mean, that's why you see the least traffic fatalities per mile drive is in Rhode Island, which is little more than a city state with Providence. It's the smallest state. It's tiny. it just makes sense. Low population or low number of, you know, not that many roads, not that much driving going on. The Dakotas were way, you know, down on the list and places that have a lot less traffic because there are fewer people, even in some places that do have a lot of roads. So anyway, I don't think that is nearly as bad as they make it out to sound. Alamo adds more than 400 mission-era artifacts to its collection. Alamo Trust, the new big site that's been redone, nonprofit steward, you know, the group that took over and it's been created to please all these political people instead of the people who saved the Alamo, Daughters of the Republic of Texas, who ran it so well. They saved it. Government didn't save it. It was going to go away. City of San Antonio didn't save it. The daughters raised the money and saved it. They ran it for near 100 years and did a great job. And, of course, the politicians came. Everybody wanted to get their hands on it, and they've ruined it. So now this Alamo Trust, which has been scandal-plagued since its creation, hopefully we've got that a little bit more on track with the defeat. You know, no more George P. Bush in the land office and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, they announced a big, big collection being donated to them. They will not disclose the price, but Donald and Louise Yena, Y-E-N-A, he's a renowned Western artist, had tons of artifacts. He said he used these artifacts to inform his paintings, and donated six large paintings depicting life in early Spanish Texas and the Battle of the Alamo. And he's 89 now. He said, "We are excited to see our historical collection go to somewhere as unique and revered as the Alamo. It's important to the Yano family that we share our art and artifacts with not only the people of San Antonio, but the Alamo's many visitors from around the world. The more than 400-piece collection will be displayed at the Alamo Collection Center, which is supposed to open early next year. And it'll show what life was like in the before the historic battle in 1836, when it was known as Mission San Antonio de Valero. The Donald and Louise Yena Spanish Colonial Collection will be added to the 2,000-piece artifact collection that they already have in more than 430 pieces that were collected by rock musician Phil Collins that he donated to Texas." So that's exciting. I know our good friend Eddie Dixon was commissioned to, you know, we have no photographs of the Yellow Rose of Texas at all. And Eddie is one of the premier top five or six historical, accurate, you know, museum grade sculptors on planet Earth. And Eddie finished the Yellow Rose of Texas. And it's interpretive because, you know, he's historical accuracy, but there are no photos of this woman. That's a story in and of itself with the various committees during the deal. But anyway, he was commissioned to do that, and I believe he's already delivered the Yellow Rose of Texas, and I think it's already been placed in the new, you know, ongoing redo that we at least got the worst of it stopped and maybe put this Alamo Plaza redo back on the proper track. And I think Eddie's already been down and placed it. So when you see the Yellow Rose of Texas, you know it's one of our good friends there who did it. All right, my friends, today in Texas history, speaking of the Yellow Rose, in 1821, on the 4th of October, men under James Long captured the city of La Bahia. Mexican troops arrived 4 days later, and is the surrender of him. They surrendered. This is one of the early skirmishes, well, you know, a good ways, but more than a decade before the actual War of Independence. And in 1862, during the Civil War, a Battle of Galveston, Confederate troops surrendered Galveston to Union forces. It's also the date, 4th of October, 1898, when they had noticed a big outbreak of dangerous smallpox in Laredo. It was pretty bad. They had to call in the 10th U.S. Cavalry to help maintain the peace because they put a quarantine in place all the way through May. Our look at Texas history, sponsored by USA Investigations, providing employment background checks, security, surveillance, witness interviews and statements, investigations, and much more. Learn about the team and investigate for detail at usainvestigations.net.
Fred on Texas returns after we hear from the folks who make the show possible.
A Texas Aggie from the big country said he and his wife visited Dr. Sylvia Zuniga at Dental Care in Costa Rica, spent about $7,000 on the entire trip, and yet saved over $5,000. He asked, "How could it be any better?" Our Aggie friend and listener wrote, "Thank you for recommending Sylvia. Her work and service was what you said it would be, very good. It took me several months of listening to you and researching on the internet to finally decide to do it. So glad I did." He added that the dental work he had done would have been about $12,000 at home, and of course that wouldn't have come with a fun vacation in which he and his wife toured volcanoes, hot springs, a nature and wildlife park, a coffee farm, a central market, and took a riverboat ride, went ziplining, and dined at some nice restaurants. Learn more about Dr. Sylvia Zuniga and Dento Care by clicking the banner at PrattonTexas.com. Finally, having your teeth fixed and beautiful can be affordable and even fun.
What happens if another party responsible for your injury doesn't step up to make your loss whole? How do you go about getting what you're owed for your loss? Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group can help get those responsible to actually accept and act on that responsibility. Ted Liggett does it every day with integrity, advocacy, and results. Call Ted Liggett, the heavy hitter, at 806-744-HURT or visit LiggettLawGroup.com. Don't be cheated. Call Ted Liggett and the Liggett Law Group.
Standing in spirit with those who won Texas liberty and working to stop the hordes on the left. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas, ladies and gentlemen. A justice of the peace down in Montgomery County, that's Conroe area in southeast Texas, will be able to keep his voluntary chaplaincy program and opening court prayer ceremony. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit has ruled in his favor because, as always, the godless left comes in and tries to get rid of recognition of our Lord God in all the public square and completely perverts the way only the devil can what the Constitution says. The Establishment Clause is about the government not being able to establish an official religion. There is no separation. That's from a letter Thomas Jefferson wrote, separation of church and state, and even they get the context of that wrong. Anyway, Kim Roberts, writing at the Texan, says that Judge Wayne Mack was sued by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Now, think about that. They're claiming they have a freedom from something they don't like. This is what we're getting from all the left, that they have some kind of right to be free of people disagreeing with, say, transsexualism or homosexualism or any of this. In other words, anything they disagree with, they have a freedom from having to experience it, see it, hear it. In other words, basically, it's adolescent in nature, or actually before that, it's childish. It's stamp your feet, and we demand freedom from ever having any kind of discipline or disagreement or anybody ever disagreeing with us. And of course, to anyone with an intellect, and it's shockingly how few in the country there seem to be on these issues these days and how they don't recognize this, what they're saying is we don't want freedom. Because freedom inherently, in and of itself, means that there's always going to be people who do other things from what you do or whatever. And for the most part, and I'm not a full-fledged libertarian. I believe there's government has a purpose, and I believe our Constitution makes that clear, that there are limits on human behavior because, obviously, sure, you know, the old thing about your freedom ends, at, you know, stops at the end of my nose or whatever, when it affects me and my rights. Now, the left will say, you all are hypocritical because you agree you think that there ought to be regulation of this or that. Well, sure, there's got to be regulation. Does your freedom mean that you can murder me because you don't like me as a neighbor? Does freedom mean that I don't like how you handled, cut me off in traffic? I can chase you down and with impunity wreck your car or maybe take your life or injure you? Well, abortion's the same thing. Does your freedom that you want to have sex at any time, you don't want to ever have to say no to carnal pleasures and all of that, mean that you have the right to murder an innocent baby for your own convenience when you are the one who chose not to exercise reproductive choice at the time when it's appropriate? I mean, there have to be rules, and we're always going to debate where the boundaries of these rules are. But this Freedom From Religion Foundation that seems to cower a lot of people and, you know, little city council people and stuff when they send them a letter, they're asserting an absurd and ridiculous idea. And the idea is that we have a fundamental right to not have to see things we don't like. Well, Robert, I mean, a bunch of people on the right don't want sex clubs in their community and all that. I got it. Got it. I told you. There's always this gray area in there that we decide through politics. It's what politics is. The polis gets together and decides it. And there's always, that's why these utopianist ideas, including utopianist libertarianism, are all laughable, because they assume that you can just everything can just go one way, you know, all the way, and everything would be fine. And that's not true. So this Freedom From Religion Foundation and an anonymous attorney known as John Roakes, they had to have somebody that practices in this guy's court to be a plaintiff. So they don't even have the guts to put their name on it, which I think is amazing, because this isn't like you're dealing with a minor or someone that's been subject to a horrible crime like rape or something. They claim Mac was violating the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Really? I don't see. Where did this judge establish an official religion, huh? Well, he was represented, the judge was, by Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher, LLP, as well as the Great First Liberty. And he had established a chaplaincy program of clergy and laypersons from a variety of faiths and denominations. And that program was created to aid members of the community while he conducts independent death investigations. In other words, has to go out and do the job of a death investigation. The chaplains are invited to offer prayer or encouraging words or whatever. The panel of the Fifth Circuit, Judge Jerry Smith authored the opinion, said that granted Mac's motion for summary judgment after concluding that the opening prayer is non-coercive and reversing the district court's judgment. So this is the point. These leftists get district court judgments in their favor all the time, whether it's in all-Democrat Harris County in the bench or all-Democrat Travis County. Doesn't mean they're right. That's why you got to be careful on this. Well, the court ruled. Well, you got to wait and see. The cry of coercion is just crazy. The Congress begins with prayer. The Supreme Court begins with prayer. And it's not coercive. And here's another thing that's always I find it extremely depressingly funny, if you know what I mean, because it's extraordinarily sad that there are atheists and people like that. I mean, they're dooming their own soul and they're dishonoring the God who created them. But God, that's the great uniqueness of humanity. God gave us free will so that we're not just slaves. We're not automatons. And that's why we're so special, why the angels were jealous and all kinds of things. If there is no God, how in the world can listening to a prayer or a reference to God cause you any kind of problem? Let's just face it. I mean, it's sort of like somebody going to one of these local meetings and sitting there demanding that the earth is flat. All this is a con. There's no round earth. It's flat. You know, how does that it doesn't affect me. But these people, if there is no God, then a prayer or something is not any more of an interruption than somebody having to say, excuse me, while they belch. Right? But somehow it so deeply bothers them, which I think anybody that knows much of their theology understands. It bothers them deeply because we have a conscience and because obviously there is the spirit world working, and we're talking about the spirit of evil. They wouldn't be bothered with it unless something was telling them, you got to stop this, you got to stop it. I don't know. It's just the Fifth Circuit took care of this issue. But it's amazing how often, one reason I wanted to bring this up, though, is it's amazing how often little local governments are still cowed by these things. When they get the letter from some lefty ACLU attorney, like on the pro-life amendments and stuff, and the ACLU says they're going to sue these towns in Texas, and then, of course, eventually withdrew the suit and didn't sue. Well, somebody sent a letter. I'm sorry, anybody can put anything on a letterhead and say anything. They may be an expert, they may have some kind of standing or whatever, but it's just an assertion most of the time. So I don't understand why that gives people problems. And way to go for the judge for fighting for this and fighting for rights right. He's not, obviously the evidence was clear that he didn't try to impose some particular form of religion in the courtroom. His chaplaincy program had people from all across the spectrum of faiths, and sounds like just the wonderful kind of humanitarian thing that the left always tries to claim a monopoly upon, caring for people. just caring for people at a time when there's a death investigation going on and people are at their most vulnerable. And of course, who comes after that? The left. Somehow they think a bureaucrat in some government paid office that doesn't give a darn at all about the people would do a better job caring, because that's always their solution for everything, a big government program for such. But of course, you can't have religion in it, which is, again, ridiculous. Back in a moment, my friends.
Don't like the brakes? Some say the brakes are better than Pratt. But then again, those folks don't listen.
The name may be Specialty Trucks of Lubbock, but these guys have repeat customers across the country. Why? Because they save you serious money. Mike Crafton and Jason Duncan specialize in finding and reconditioning quality work trucks, including heavy-duty pickups, utility-bodied trucks, bucket trucks, and more. Specialty Trucks of Lubbock can get you the work truck you need and save you money. You can see inventory online at specialtytrucksoflubbock.com or request them to find the truck you need. Talk to Mike or Jason at specialtytrucksoflubbock.com.
If providing health insurance for yourself or your employees is costing more than you can afford, listen closely to this message.
I think one of the challenges that all small business owners are facing today is while they may be less than 50 employees, they're still competing with the big box companies that have full-blown benefit plans.
Michael Hurley of Hurley Benefit Services.
And with the price almost reaching the point of unaffordability, employers are looking for solutions. And my out-of-the-box thinking is providing a solution. We enrolled a local company, and we were able to save that employer one-third of his budget, which was equal to a little over $100,000 that he was paying prior to working with my agency.
Life, Health, Dental. With the innovative coverage offered by Hurley Benefit Services, you can have individual or group coverage that is a lot better, that costs a lot less. Hurley Benefit Services is independently owned, and they're online at hurleybenefits.com. H-U-R-L-E-Y benefits.com.
He secretly has a red, white, and blue flag in his closet with the number 1787 scrawled on it. It's Pratt on Texas. Now, here's your host, Robert Pratt.
Welcome back to Pratt on Texas. Our Lone Star story of the day. The U.S. Supreme Court is now in its fall term. Hearing oral arguments began yesterday. Several cases, like Moore and versus Harper, I think, and Sackett versus EBA, will have big effects on Texas. Our Lone Star story of the day, sponsored by our good friends at Allied Compliance Services. Find out more at AlliedCompliance.com. Now, this week is the beginning of the fall term where they hear oral arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court, the Dallas Morning News had a big piece by Rebecca Alvey. Supreme Court cases Texans should follow. And one of them is talking about the regulation of big tech. It's real funny. The whole story is about the fall term, and yet the very first whole part of the story is about a case that hasn't even made it to the court's docket. If you ever wanted to see an example of how the mainstream media, even with editors and people that try to be professional about it, try to stack stories to get the thing they care about out there, the whole purpose of this story is the court's hearing, and they spend the entire first part of the story at the Dallas Morning News talking about this case that Texas just won at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, but there have been conflicting opinions and others about social media platforms. They keep saying it keeps them from blocking certain political speech. It's not really true. It gives consumers an ability to know why their stuff was blocked, and they have to have policies that are clear so that it's not all behind the curtain. But that's not even on the court's docket, and yet that's how the story about the court's fall term and it begins. Just saying, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, it's the first page or two if you printed it out. Now, in fact, it goes more than that. It's the first 50% of the article, even though the articles are supposed to be about cases we're going to hear. Now, they finally, way down into this, get the cases that are on the docket. Supreme Court, she writes, has two cases on the docket that may impact, she means affect, wouldn't slam into, may affect voting rights in 2024. One case coming from North Carolina asked the court to remove the ability of state courts to review election laws under their constitutions, while another out of Alabama challenges congressional redistricting focus heavily on gerrymandering and the ability of legislatures to redefine voting rules. That's how they put it there. It's Merrill versus Milligan, Alabama. That'll be heard. That was heard today, I think. And then the North Carolina case, Moore versus Harper, which is really the more important case. It hasn't. It's on the docket, but it hadn't been scheduled yet for its oral arguments. Now, another one that everybody in Texas is affected by, and particularly people in agriculture, but pretty much everybody, is this Waters of the United States, WOTUS crap that won't go away. We got a big win under Trump, and then the left gets in there again, and they want to make turn EPA back into full-out tyrannical, non-representative dictators who just decide that, oh my gosh, it rained 4 inches and there's a little pond in your grass. That makes it a navigable waterway, and that is not an exaggeration. That's why this has been so incredibly insane. But it will be a big case. Sackett versus, oh, pardon me, ladies and gentlemen, a little noise there. Sackett versus, what did I say before? I lost my place looking at that little thing going off. Sackett versus EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. And, of course, the Dallas Morning News writer says, a case that could challenge the 1972 Clean Water Act. No, all this stuff was understood, and then way back in the Obama years, you got them just deciding to make up laws. The law always said navigable waterways. There's nothing navigable about your bar ditch or the pond on your property. And yet this is what's happened. And we won again, and then all of a sudden it's gone back. And there's a lot that we're going to be watching. The Texas direct ties, there's a free speech case, 303 Creative versus Alenis. It hasn't yet been set for oral arguments. Senator Cruz and others have filed an amicus brief supporting this graphic designer who claims a Colorado law violates her freedom of speech by not allowing her to advertise her refusal to design things for homosexual so-called marriages. They're not marriages. I'm sorry, you can call it that all day. The state can call it that. A marriage to me is a religious expression. It is a moral thing, and call it that all you want, but it's just dumb. And so it's like the cake shop place. It's only tied to Texas, as Ted Cruz has been involved in, but they put it in the Texas ties thing. Another case set for October 11th considers an appeal from a Texas inmate, Rodney Reed, who was sentenced to death penalty over 20 years ago for a murder in Bastrop County. It will decide when prisoners can request DNA testing of a crime scene evidence after a conviction. And there's a case, Hollad versus Brackeen, case that will determine the constitutionality of the Indian Child Welfare Act. Now, this is pretty well known amongst people involved in adoptions. We have an institutionalized, nasty, racist set of rules out there that American Indian children have to be given over to people on reservations before essentially that has a preference instead of a family who can adopt them immediately and wants them and maybe even already has a relationship with them. That's how that case came about in Texas, because the family in Fort Worth had already fostered these kids. And then it's just sickening. And our attorney general has been on the right side of this one. I think we lost at the last point on that, but it's going before the Supreme Court, and it needs to be struck down. Oh, there are big arguments. Well, we're trying to preserve the race and all that. Well, yeah, exactly. Inherently racist. It's just wrong in all ways, and needs to go away. Now, the big case we need to be thinking about, the one that hasn't been said, I know the Alabama case is important, but the bigger case is the case of Moore versus Harper, ladies and gentlemen. And I want to make sure you understand that case. Amy Howe, who writes Howe on the Court, SCOTUS blog, one of the main contributors there, her own blog is Howe on the Court. She has a big thing explaining that she wrote back in the spring when the court put this on the agenda. Now, this week, over the weekend, or maybe Monday, Joel Pollack at Breitbart, one of their columnists, had a really good piece. Supreme Court to consider electoral argument targeted by DOJ, January 6th committee is, quote, insurrection, end quote. So he's taking that lean to it. And he's talking about how the DOJ under Biden has served subpoenas and search warrants on dozens of individuals who simply made a political argument that presidential electors can legally be rejected by the vice president or sent back to state legislatures for further reconsideration. That, of course, if that's a crime, we no longer have a country or any kind of free speech because it's simply a political opinion. But the left is treating it as a crime. They call it a fake electors inquiry, and it's bull. Nobody was asking for fake electors. They were interpreting the Constitution, say the VP could object. It's not just a ceremonial role. That's why it's expressed in the Constitution, and he could send these back for clarification to state legislatures. By the way, I think 120, 130 years ago, there wouldn't have been any question about this. If you go back and look, there was a lot of questioning over things like this. It's Article 1, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution that says the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives. So this is about federal elections, which there are none. There's states doing them one by one, but elections in each state that relate to federal office. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. And that's right. It doesn't say by the courts there, the totality of the government there. It says by the Congress, the Congress of each state, the legislature of each state. And that's the basis of this article, that even a state Supreme Court system cannot interfere with the legislature's options. And of course, you look at it, you say, well, wait a minute. If the legislature does something that's against their own state constitution, isn't that the job of the court? Ah, but the federal constitution grants them the power to regulate elections, and so a legislature is the only thing that can trump, you know, overrule itself in the future. So more on this in a moment. Stay with us.
Stay in the saddle. Pratt on Texas will be right back.
If you're sick to death of the mainstream news, we invite you to check out 21st Century Watch magazine. We cover developments we have no choice but to watch from a biblical perspective. Not only is it priceless, it's free. Call 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. That's 903-561-7070 and 21stcenturywatch.com. A little hope would be nice.
Today's vehicles require more electrical power from the battery than ever before, and Texas Battery will get you the correct battery. Even better, Texas Battery will install your new battery without a power loss, helping you avoid resetting your electronics. Service and specific knowledge sets Texas Battery apart from big box stores and franchised chains. Go to TexasBattery.com for more information or stop by Texas Battery in Lubbock for the correct battery for your vehicle. Texas starts with TexasBattery.com. TexasBattery.com.
Was your property damaged by wildfire? Winters Dozer Service has the equipment and know-how to get your land cleaned up and back in shape. Some counties may even have state assistance available, so get with Winters Dozer Service now to get your property back in order. And while at it, plan to build future fire breaks with Winters Dozer Service. Get going now. Visit wintersdozerservice.com. That's wintersdozerservice.com.
A Texan by birth, a patriot by conviction. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
All right, so more on Moore versus Harper here on Pratt on Texas on the Texas Hour. Joel Pollack at Breitbart wrote in his column, at the time the Supreme Court declined to hear appeals from Republicans who argued that state courts had overstepped their legal authority, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote, at that time the court had failed to deal with an issue that would recur, and it has. And in fact, it has in a lot of places, in various forms. Court was chicken to do that. They should have worked on it. The dispute in Moore versus Harper is not about 2020 election, but rather about congressional redistricting in North Carolina. However, it has implications for the arguments made about the 2020 election, arguments now considered part of a, quote, insurrection by people who simply disagree with the interpretation of the Constitution. That's where Pollack was going in his Breitbart column. So to Amy Howe on Howe and the Court back in June, the last part of June, she wrote about this case. The Supreme Court will take up a case from North Carolina next term that could upend federal elections by eliminating, and remember, when you say that, there are no federal elections. We have no national elections in America. No election for president. These are state elections. When she says federal, she means for federal office, but they're state elections for federal office. So just keep that clear, because a lot of people get completely off on this simply because they don't understand the fundamentals of it. Could upend federal elections by eliminating virtually all oversight of those elections by state courts. Which, of course, is fine. If people are unhappy with what the legislature did in their state on elections, they just can go and unelect them, district by district. On Thursday, the justices granted, this is back in June, granted a review in Moore versus Harper, a dispute arising from the state's efforts to draw new congressional maps in response to the 2020 census. The doctrine at the heart of the case is known as the independent state legislature theory, the idea that under the Constitution, only the legislature has the power to regulate federal elections without interference from state courts. It's what it says. Proponents of the theory point to the Constitution's Elections Clause, which gives state legislatures the power to set the, quote, times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives, end quote. In other words, for federal office. Then Chief Justice William Rehnquist was an early proponent of the theory. In a concurring opinion in Bush versus Gore in the 2000 election case out of Florida that halted the recount there, Rehnquist, in an opinion joined by Justices Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, outlined his view. In other words, this isn't new, folks. Outlined his view that the state court's recount conflicted with the deadline set by the legislature for the election. The issue returned to the Supreme Court in 2020 when the justices turned down a request by Pennsylvania Republicans to fast-track their challenge to a Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling that required state election officials to count mail-in ballots received within 3 days of Election Day. In an opinion that accompanied the court's order, Justice Samuel Alito, joined by Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch, suggested that the state Supreme Court's decision to extend the deadline for counting ballots likely violated the Constitution. But remember, folks, they didn't do anything on that. There are all kinds of problems in that 2020 election. After the Republican-controlled North Carolina legislature adopted a new congressional map in early November of 2021, a group of Democrat voters and nonprofits, these are all the lefty front groups, I covered it at the time with you, went to state court to challenge the map. They contended, among other things, that because the state is roughly divided between Democrats and Republicans and unaffiliated voters, the new map, which would have done what all redistricting does, give the majority party more seats and more firm seats, they said, oh, that would just be wrong. That's partisan gerrymandering and violates the state's constitution. In February 2022, the North Carolina Supreme Court blocked its own state, its own legislature, from using the map that its legislature adopted. Well, the trial court then adopted a new map drawn by three experts appointed by the court. We've had this happen in Texas before. But it was federal courts that did it, not the state. This was interesting because it's intrastate. Republican state legislators came to the Supreme Court on an emergency basis in late February, asking the justices to reinstate the legislature's original map before the state's primary election, which took place in May. But over a dissent by Alito that was again joined by Thomas and Gorsuch, the court turned down the request. Both the Alito dissent and a concurring opinion by Justice Kavanaugh, however, called the independent state legislature theory an important question, with Alito adding that the justices will have to resolve this question sooner or later, and the sooner we do so, the better. Well, they're hearing the case this fall. Now, this case could still end up falling apart and not giving us what we want, because there are some things involved in the case itself, and if the majority of justices don't want to deal with the fundamental independent legislature theory, then they can hack this up just on the particular issues that went on in North Carolina. So the legislators returned to the court in March seeking review of the North Carolina Supreme Court's decision invalidating the legislature's map and ordering a new map for the 2022 elections. They told the justices that the state Supreme Court's order was starkly contrary to the Elections Clause. The text of that clause, the legislatures insist, creates the power to regulate the times, places, and manner of federal elections and invest that power in the legislature of each state. The independent state legislature question, the legislators stressed, is almost certain to keep arising until the court definitively resolves it. And because North Carolina will use the map created by the court in 2022 congressional elections, they continued, the justices should resolve the question in this case rather than having to do it on an expedited basis in a dispute arising after an election's already occurred. State now, again, there are always little details in these cases that could throw everything off. State officials countered that North Carolina dispute would not resolve the independent state legislature question at all because the state legislature had specifically given the state's courts the power to impose a temporary redistricting plan, just as the state Supreme Court did. So you can always, the big question matters a lot to everybody, but there's always something in the fly in the ointment. A group of challengers added that in any event, the U.S. Supreme Court lacked the authority to hear the dispute now because there was no final judgment by the state Supreme Court, which is considering currently whether the replacement map is valid. But of course, they drew it, so. So, after considering the case at three consecutive conferences, the justices finally granted review back in June. It is going to be argued sometime this fall. The one in Alabama is important. This case, though, Moore v. Harper, is even more important because it goes to the deep heart of this idea that if the federal Constitution means what it says, that everything to do with the senators and representatives is vested with the state legislature, and it says that specifically, then that precludes any other state agency like the judicial system or the executive interfering with the decisions of the legislature, which would generally include, you know, drawing districts and how you run elections and all this kind of stuff. Well, Robert, what about the Voting Rights Act and all this? Well, this is a real problem. This is why it's bad to enact sweeping law that grants the federal government great authority when morally we all think it needs to be done. You know, it gets you back to that old thing about hard cases make bad law. It's just like to right the wrongs of institutionalized Democratic Party, institutionalized segregation, pure racism, Jim Crow. We defined places of public convenience. We made almost all private property somehow subject to being public property. The moral part of that was not wrong, but the consequences of that have been terribly wrong. And the fact is, the U.S. Constitution doesn't say to the states, where it would imply whatever the state government, it specifically denotes the legislature being in charge of this kind of stuff. And so, ladies and gentlemen, that's the way it ought to be. I think the state legislature theory is great and right. And even if I were, you know, state like California with an all-Democrat legislature and all of that, it's still the way it's designed. And it doesn't hurt the people because the people are much more able to unelect state representatives, for example, every 2 years to right what they think is a wrong than they ever are people sitting on judicial benches in appellate court levels. So we'll see. Big cases this year. Thanks for joining us on Pratt on Texas. Long live liberty, long live Texas, and may God bless us all. Adios, mis amigos.
Hear all the great Texas music Pratt on Texas is famous for by listening to the show on the air or by stream. 5 to 6 p.m. Central in Lubbock. Tune to 98.7 FM or 1420 AM on KWBF. In Abilene and the Big Country, tune to 96.1 FM Q Country.